This podcast is sponsored by Starling Bank. Peatlands are essential for people and the planet in lots of incredible ways. They act like natural sponges, storing more carbon than all of the world's rainforests put together. And they're a habitat for a whole host of wildlife. And they act as flood defences in the face of climate change. Starling Bank have been funding the National Trust's work towards saving our peatlands since 2023, supporting projects that will restore and protect over 400 hectares of the UK's precious peatland. That's 372 football pitches. Search online for Starling Bank and the National Trust to find out more. Hello and welcome to the National Trust podcast. I'm Claire Hickenbotham. Before we start this episode, I'd like to let you know that from April, the National Trust podcast is changing to bring you more immersive stories from history and nature. Look out for our new name and more by giving this show a follow in your favourite podcast app. Today, we're out walking through the hills of Oxfordshire, the wetlands of Wick and Fen, the valleys of the Upper Conway catchment, and the Mourne Mountains in Northern Ireland. That's quite some trek for a single walk, so join from the comfort of your home and find out what unites all of these unique and wonderful landscapes and how caring for the natural world is playing a role in the cost and taste of our pints. I've come today for a bit of a walk that I'm familiar with. So I'm at Coles Hill, which is a village in Oxfordshire, and it's somewhere I walk a lot with my black lab buddy. Great rolling hills, views to the White Horse at Uffington, the Ridgeway, and at the other side of the estate, the land drops down towards the Thames, and it's that direction I'm going to walk first. I'm meeting Richard, who looks after the countryside here, and he's going to explain about some of the work that they do. We've got to head up through the village, so up the hill, past the National Trust-owned cottages. They're all chocolate box, they're all beautiful, one of which is the Radnor Arms, an amazing little pub with cosy nooks and crannies in it. And we're going to have a little stop there later because it features actually in 100 Great Pub Walks, a book from the National Trust. And we're going to go on one of those walks, and hopefully at the end of the day, Richard is going to take me back to the pub and have a well-earned pint. We've walked up from the Coles Hill estate office through the village, past the Radnor Arms, the pub, a lovely little spot, to meet Richard Watson, who's one of the countryside team that looks after the landscape here. Hi, Richard. Nice to meet you.
Good morning. Lovely
I'm
to
assuming
meet you.
You're Richard with binoculars around your head.
Yes.
And wellies on your
Absolutely.
Feet.
Absolutely.
You are well equipped.
I am.
This is such a lovely part of the world to call your office.
It is. It's fabulous. We're lucky here because we've got the Cotswolds to the north of us. And then people go down towards kind of Dorset, Devon and stuff for the holidays, but it's a bit of a forgotten corner here. But actually, as you can see, it's beautiful, lovely rolling countryside with the River Thames to the north of us here. So we're looking over the Thames kind of floodplain.
And a lot of what we can see dropping down away in front of us is land that the National Trust manages.
It is, yes. So Buskett and Coles Hill Estates amount to 2,700 hectares altogether. So yes, a large area of land.
Unsurprisingly for Richard, the team and the millions that work outdoors throughout the year, things can get a bit wet. But working out what to do in the face of extreme and changing weather conditions adds to the daily challenge of looking after the countryside. A lot of the work that you do around here, as we're looking down at the Thames, having climbed up to the top of the
yes.
hill from the River Cole, hence
yep.
Coles Hill, I
yes.
guess.
Yes.
You're doing a lot of work on the River Cole and in the valley then around the
yes.
Thames, because that's Buskett Village
yes.
has the Thames running through it, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So water is a key theme here, both managing water in the winter or in the summer if there's big storms, trying to reduce flooding, but also then conversely in the summer during droughts, trying to keep more of the water back. So, yeah, managing the water is a key theme for us, and increasingly so as the climate's changing and we're getting more intense weather events.
In the time leading up to meeting Richard, there have been four major storms in 3 months, putting extra strains on the landscape. This has meant that the land Richard looks after, alongside tenant farmers, has been subject to intense flooding, causing the farmers to lose an entire crop.
So our farm tenants are finding it increasingly difficult to grow cereal crops. As you can see, the one in front of us on the top of the hill there, but if this was down by the river, it would have been underwater on and off since mid-September, right the way through. So the farmers have either been unable to plant the cereal crop, or they did manage to get it in the ground, and then the floods have come along and it's been underwater for several weeks, and that would have killed it off.
The effects of climate change have been more noticeable in recent times than ever before. It's not just the dramatic images of damage we see in the news, but deeper and longer lasting effects at the top of our food chain. While farmers are finding it hard to grow the crops they need to keep the nation fed, the wonky weather is having a knock-on effect for the things we love to treat ourselves with. In a recent BBC News article, it's reported that the change in climate is also having an impact on the taste and cost of beer as well, with researchers from Cambridge University identifying a growing problem with hotter, drier summers and more intense winters. It's in that direction towards Cambridge where the next stop on our pub walk begins. A stone's throw from the Maidshead pub is Wicken Fen, the oldest nature reserve in the National Trust. At no other place is it more noticeable to trace the fine lines between what is good for looking after our planet versus the necessary agricultural work needed to keep us ticking. It's there that we meet Ajay Tagala, a ranger helping to restore some of the land previously lost to intense farming practices.
The fens of East Anglia once spread for thousands of square miles, really. It was this vast area of reeds, of water, and wildlife. But over the last sort of few centuries, really, it's gradually been tamed and drained for agriculture, for development. So a lot of this happened in the 1600s. A lot of land was drained then and up into the Victorian times because it's really good for growing crops. It's a really good place to feed the nation from. And of course, we've got Cambridge nearby, so that's growing. So there's all this pressure to use the land for man-made pursuits. So over a period of several years, literally, it was all lost apart from less than 1%. And Wicken Fen is part of that less than 1% of original fen.
Part of what made the fen so attractive for farming, it's peat-rich landscape.
Peat is very good for farming because it has a high moisture content and crops need water to grow. So it's the perfect growing medium for agriculture.
Peat is a bit of an organic supermaterial, great for growing, but even better at protecting our planet. Peatlands like Wicken Fen amount to just over 10% of the total land in the UK. Just that small amount holds more carbon than all of the forests in France, Germany and Britain combined. There is, however, a catch. In order to stay effective at capturing carbon, peat needs to stay wet and undisturbed, something which historically hasn't happened.
When peat is removed from the environment, whether it be perhaps being ploughed and getting sort of whipped up into a dust, it can blow away because it's very fine. There used to be these big, thick, chocolate-coloured clouds years ago called fen blows. We don't get them so much now, but occasionally we do. So that happens. The soil is lost, it literally blows away. And at the same time, that process releases carbon into the atmosphere.
The draining of the fens for farming to gain access to more fertile land to grow crops on has been described as the greatest single ecological catastrophe that has ever occurred in England. Part of the work Ajay and the team are undertaking is restoring as much peatland habitat as possible. Not only is this helping to tackle the carbon in the atmosphere, but it's also allowing nature to thrive. And when it can do that, the positive outcomes keep on growing.
The drainage of the fens had a catastrophic effect on biodiversity and on nature. So many things were lost. So we've got species that went extinct. The swallowtail butterfly, for example, hung on at Wicken Fen until the 1950s. But even the conservation work we were doing here wasn't enough to sustain it because wildlife needs a large area. So that's kind of what we're doing here, is we're creating wider space for nature to have more room to spread and colonise. And actually, one of the species that were lost 500 years ago was Britain's tallest bird, the crane. They went extinct due to hunting and loss of habitat, loss of the wetlands, because they nest in remote, reedy spots where they're undisturbed. But a few years ago, they made a comeback to Wiccan, and they're on the up. So it's been, yeah, a huge loss, but it's not irreversible, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, Wiccan Fen's an amazing place, so much history, so many wildlife species recorded, but it is just a little fragment in a desert, really, surrounded by intensively managed land. So much has been lost, and as good as Wiccan itself is, it's so small, and it's almost like an upside-down saucer. It's kind of like a little mound surrounded by lower-lying ground, and that means that the water, by the nature of gravity, drains away, and so we're constantly trying to keep it wet so that the species that need that wet environment have the habitat they need to thrive.
When it comes to working with gravity, one of the more challenging spots for peatland restoration is on the side of a mountain. And it's there where our next pub walk takes place. Around the peaks and valleys of the Mourne Mountains in Northern Ireland are some stunning walks for the more adventurous, with a cosy rest stop, the Harbour House Inn and Macken's Bar in Newcastle. Like Wiccan Fen, the area is cared for by a team of rangers, one of which is James Fisher, who has some unique ways of keeping the peatlands healthy.
Whenever we look at the plants that are growing here, it would come out as almost an acid grassland or dry heath, because there's so little water is actually being retained by the deep peat here. So what we're doing in the erosion gullies is constructing small timber dams, and where we have shallower gradients, we use bunds.
A bund is a type of embankment, sort of like a dam, that's designed to keep water in one place. The bunds that have been created at the Mournes have been made with some special help from some woolly creatures.
The bunds themselves, which it's really interesting, we've been trialling the use of sheep wool to make the bunds. These would normally have been made from the core, which is a byproduct of that sort of coconut fibre. If we can use the sheep wool, which is from the sheep that are actually grazing the site, it's a good use of that wool, and it allows circularity to the process. Whenever we install these dams, the water then collects behind them. We're not trying to keep the water on the mountain as such, just to slow it enough that the surrounding landscape then starts to wet up and we get the regeneration of some of the peat-building plants such as the sphagnum mosses and the sedges.
By allowing these plants to grow and then naturally decay in order to form the peat, it's hoped that this can kickstart some organic regeneration. But it's a very slow process.
Peat forms at something like a millimetre a year, so you can imagine the length of time it takes for any sort of depth of peat to accumulate. But over time, that forms a thick blanket over the landscape, which is why we call it a blanket bog.
The final stop on our pub walk takes us to North Wales and the Upper Conwy catchment. The area accounts for 3% of the total land in Wales, which is roughly equivalent to the size of the Isle of Wight. With an area that vast, there are too many great watering holes and walks to mention fully, but aside from the physical work of restoring the peatland within it, Ranger Dewey Davis explains that it's the connection with the people in the landscape that can really help to make a difference.
The area that I work in is to the northeast of Eryri National Park, also known as Snowdonia National Park, and it's basically the river catchment of Avon Conwy, the River Conwy. It starts in the uplands of somewhere called Y Meicnaint, and it flows down all the way to Conwy itself, where the famous Conwy Castle is. There's parts of the catchment higher up, certainly, where it's pretty idyllic. You know, it's the typical views and scenery of a national park such as Eryri. The mountains are a bit more rugged there, but to the south and to the east, you've got this vast area of peatland called Y Meicnaint. And that's an area of focus for our project, really, in terms of the restoration of the peatland there.
Like the other rangers we have met on our walks, Dewey and the team work tirelessly to keep the peatlands wet and the water in places it's supposed to be.
But none of that would or could happen on the ground if we hadn't engaged with the community that we're working in. You know, ignore the people at your peril has always been my sort of mantra in the project, because if you don't bring them along with you... I'm paraphrasing Attenborough here, you know, if they don't understand the work that you're doing, why, How can they possibly care about it themselves?
For Dewey, there is a special connection between the Welsh language and a sense of belonging with a phrase taken from sheep farming.
One of my favourites really is the notion of cnefin. The notion of it sort of translates across to humans as well. You belong to a cnefin, this is your cnefin, your patch. You're comfortable there. It's where you were born and bred, and you know pretty much everyone there, and you know the rhythms of the place and all sorts. So I think if you talk about cnefin, you truly understand the concept of cnefin, not just for farming, but for from a human perspective as well. You're already there some way with some of our communities. Some of the best time I've spent has been in a farmer's kitchen, just having cups of tea and talking about everything but work. That sort of builds that trust. Then you can get onto the task or the job that, or the idea that you've got. And yeah, if without the people, you don't get anything done.
When it comes to connecting with people, there are fewer places more perfect than the pub. And it's there that local community action and care for our spaces can grow. Tom Cox looks after his local meetup of a group called People Planet Pint. It's a worldwide collective started by Small 99 that aims to get people together and chatting about the world around them.
I like to think of it as a very inclusive community for anyone who is interested or concerned or just wants to talk about sustainability to kind of come along and talk about it. It's got no specific agenda. We've got no topics that kind of have to be discussed. It just really is just a space for folks to come and have a chat.
Thinking about the environment and what to do as an individual can often feel a little bit of a daunting task. But Tom is confident that by getting the conversations going at the local and by making the planet a little bit more front and centre in our social lives, we can work together to achieve our goals.
I think I'm optimistic about people and kind of, you know, People Planet Pint is an excellent example of how people come together and talk about these things and take these problems seriously and think of ways to solve the problem. I have absolutely no idea what it's going to be like in 5 years' time, but I am always encouraged by the amount of mobilisation, the amount of passionate people that are out there trying to create solutions to solve the problem. It's too big of a challenge to really predict where we're going to be, but I'm hoping at least socially we'll be in a much better place and we'll have a lot more people mobilised and focused on solving these issues.
Back home in Oxfordshire, having just finished our walk and coming back to the Radnor Arms for our pit stop, Richard tells me about some of the things that we can do at home to help nature thrive.
If you've got room to plant a small tree, a birch or a crab apple or a cherry or something like that, then do. That's great. Provide nectar, fruit, nuts, seeds for birds, animals and insects. Pond is one of the best things you can do for wildlife. So even if that's just a bucket sunk in the ground, with fresh water in, then the water boatmen and insects will come to that within a few days.
The journey from why is an insect important to saving our planet is a huge leap, isn't it?
It is.
But what you're saying is actually these are the fundamental things. This is the stuff you can do at home. And this is what is going to start that positive snowball effect, that chain of events that is going to have an impact.
Yes, the experts say that actually if you add up the area of all our gardens in the UK, then it's much greater than the area of all the nature reserves. So by all of us doing a little bit in our garden, we can help wildlife. That will help with climate change as well. And it can be a real positive, exciting journey. And you can share it with your children, your grandchildren. You know, we all love to see insects and things. So, yeah, it's really great to have the wildlife in our garden. We can all provide a bit of space. We can all help do our little bit. And at a cumulative scale, then it starts to make a really big difference.
That's a wonderful idea. And I think we can all raise a glass to that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the National Trust podcast. If you like what you've heard and would like to join me on more walking adventures, then you'll love our new podcast, Nature Escape. Each episode, we will be exploring a natural landscape from the comfort of wherever you're listening. and hearing from experts about how they care for our favourite places. And from April, the National Trust podcast is changing. Look out for our new shows for nature and history, and keep up to date with all things podcast by visiting nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. I look forward to joining you next time. From me, Claire Hickenbotham, goodbye. This podcast is sponsored by Starling Bank. Starling's funding has helped make the National Trust's work possible. From vital peatland restoration work at 8 sites like Wicken Fen Nature Reserve, to supporting nature workshops for thousands of children and young people. We're working together to preserve the natural world and make nature more accessible for more people each year. Search online for Starling Bank and the National Trust to find out more.